And although at the time I was not thinking of homeschooling, as soon as we knew that it was time to consider what we would do for homeschooling, I knew right away that I wanted to homeschool. But remember, I was an educator. My husband, lifelong educator, college professor, who, by the way, his talk is right after mine. And I said, honey, I really think we ought to homeschool Bridget. And he said, no way, because his whole life was invested in the educational system. And so, you know, I just kept my mouth shut, which was unusual for me, but in this case I did. And I went to a conference in which it was specifically focused on Charlotte Mason. And I didn't know who Charlotte Mason was, but I knew that it was to do with literature, and I love literature, and so that sounded good enough for me. Well, when I got there, not only did I learn about Charlotte Mason, and I will talk about that a little bit later, but I also heard Chris Davis. And if anybody has ever heard Chris Davis, he talks about turning the hearts of the fathers back home and, you know, bringing the dads home, and it's the dads' homeschool. So I went and got the tape after that, and I took it home to my hubby. And he listened, and he just did a 180. And we haven't looked back. It's been wonderful. So that's how we're homeschooling. Now, some people would say, well, how can you possibly tell me anything about homeschooling if you've only ever homeschooled one? Well, Charlotte Mason said that even if you have only one, that one may be a great boon to the world. And so I believe that. So not only that, but I've had a chance and a wonderful privilege of talking with and counseling lots and lots of homeschool families. And, of course, all of Bridget's friends have at least five in their family and usually six or seven. So we have lots of talks about that. So I just wanted to give you that little bit of background before we launch into why I'm doing this particular workshop. And I want to tell you that I am not here to sell a reading curriculum. I'm not even here to recommend one. In fact, if you put it aside for a while, it would probably be a good thing. And I'm going to tell you why. When I was a storyteller, one of the things I loved to do was to go into the schools in the lower income districts. And the reason was that the kids seemed to respond so much to the stories. And I really didn't understand why. And I had the opportunity in a couple of instances to come back in several times over a period of years. And I watched these same kids that I told stories to get better and better and better, not just at storytelling, because I would teach them to be storytellers, but to get better at reading. And this was the correlation that I saw in my very, you know, young mind. I was seeing that, okay, there is some kind of a relationship between kids telling stories and hearing stories and being a better reader and a better writer. But I didn't understand it. I just recognized that it was so. And then a few years after that, a friend gave me a book, and she said, oh, you know, you need to read this. And I didn't put it on this one, but it's called A is for Ox, and it's the it talks about the rise of illiteracy in the United States, even though we spend billions of dollars on remedial reading programs. And he says that it's because kids do not have an early experience in orality. Everybody knows what literacy is. It's reading and writing. Orality isn't like oral hygiene. It's orality is speaking and listening. Well, one of the things that we saw so often in schools is that the kids grow up not being spoken to, not being read aloud to very much in those early years. They watch a lot of television, which is not the same because there is not an engagement there. There's not a listening, speaking. You know, there's an old story that storytellers used to tell when television came to an African village and everybody started watching the television set. And so this man came in and it was an American, no doubt, and said, you know, isn't it wonderful now that everybody can have all these stories? And this one elder said, well, he said, yes, the television set does have a lot of stories, but then the television set doesn't know me. And that's the difference, isn't it? It's that personal engagement. And so in this book, he talks about the fact that children grow up feeling more and more disenfranchised because they are not able to fully engage in the literate process. And he says that it's because there's a lack of orality. Well, that was like, bingo, lights went on. that was the connection between storytelling and better reading and writing. So I began to do a lot more thinking and reading about that, and a lot of years, you know, have gone by. And we started homeschooling, and I discovered Charlotte Mason. You can't hear me? Okay, let me get the microphone then. Because people are still coming in, so I think that's good. All right, is that better? Okay. A little less, you know, kind of close feeling, but I understand that you do need to be able to hear me. So, yes. Oh, very much so.
What we do now is we listen to music, but we never hear music played. Mm. Music off CDs, mm-hmm. off tapes. We teach our children off tapes.
Right.
Is that the same thing as real life?
It's not. It's better than nothing, but it's not the same because of that live, vibrating instrument and the human person that's making it vibrate. Yes, I would definitely agree with that. Yes, so the connection between reading and writing and speaking and listening is complete and very strong. Now, let me just find out in this group here. Now, you're all homeschooling families, so that means that you all know how to read, and you know how to read pretty well, I bet. Yeah? Okay. And you like to read. Yeah? Okay. Good. How did you get there? How did you get to be an engaged reader? When you were little, let me ask you some questions. When you were young, did anyone tell you stories? Raise your hand. Okay. Did anyone sing you songs at night or during the day? Raise your hand. Yep. Okay. Did anyone learn scripture and speak it over you? Okay. Those are just three examples of oral language experiences when children are young. Most children who are growing up today in two-income homes where the kids go to daycare early in the morning almost never get that kind of thing. So you, when you were growing up, were given a great gift, and you are giving your children a great gift. So I am here to encourage you in probably what you are already doing, and that is reading aloud to your children, engaging in conversation with them, and enjoying their talk back to you. But I'm hoping that I can push that envelope a little bit more, because for me, that's the missing piece that I see in homeschooling families who would like to see their children more engaged as readers, or who might even be struggling at this point. I was talking with a mom just before I came here. She said, I have a reluctant reader. It's a fourth grader. It's a young girl. Typically, it's not a young girl. Usually, it's a young boy. And so we began to talk about it. And, you know, you could see she read aloud to him, but how come? Where was the glitch? Well, we're going to talk about some of those things. So if you take your hand out, one of the things that I like about Charlotte Mason is that whenever I think I have a new idea or a clever idea, I go back and read her stuff, and she thought of it. You know? She was always there. And so here's one that I quote that I particularly liked. It is no mistake that good readers are often articulate speakers and adept at both hearing well and speaking well. Why is that, do you think? What's the relationship? Any ideas? I mean, I don't have, there's not a one right answer to this. I just wondered what you thought. Rich vocabulary. So what they're reading is rich. Okay, and they actually internalize the vocabulary for themselves. Okay, so they read the book, but they're also engaged in some way in the literature afterwards, okay? They talk about it, or they write about it. Okay, yes, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good one. Do you mind saying that one more time so everybody can hear you? Here, you can use this. Okay, all right. Go ahead. Say it one more time.
Okay. I think when you read aloud, you have that benefit of reading books that are beyond grade level, which have a vocabulary and a more complex thought that you can then discuss and talk about. So that when you get to reading books themselves, they're used to a more mature plot, they're used to more mature vocabulary, they're
Yeah, it really has. And you know, you don't outgrow that. Everybody still loves to be read aloud to. Yes? Nice and loud so everybody can hear you.
I'm a bit kind of reversed to what you're saying. I'm a very, very good reader, but reading aloud, I'm not so good.
Okay. Well, maybe you're like my daughter Bridget now. She says, I don't like to read aloud anymore because it's too slow. Yeah, well, when you're a teenager, I think that there's that factor there, right? Everything has to be faster. Right. Okay, let's just go through a couple of definitions so we have some working terms, and then I'm going to tell you a couple stories and teach you some things, and we'll have some fun. What is orality? Well, we've already talked about that. It's speaking and listening. A lot of research has been done about that, but I thought you might like to know this. I learned this just this week, that the very first organ to develop in the womb is the ear. And it, the ear, they've done studies now on the ear and the vibrations that go into the ear, and we all know that you can speak to a child in the womb and you can speak love or you can speak not love, and they will hear. Well, the nerves that are attached to the different parts of the ear, the cochlea and so on, those nerves go into every organ and part of the body. So when you speak something into an ear, the vibration then produces like an electrical impulse through the nerves, and it goes through every part of the body, including the brain. The electrical impulse in the brain causes they call it a synapse, where you actually begin to program the brain through what goes in here. Pretty interesting idea, isn't it? So when you think about the fact that somebody might lack orality, might lack oral language experiences, that lack of basically stimulation, that vibration, but it can't be just any vibration, because, you know, they've done the research on, for example, you know, hard rock music played around a plant and classical music. You know, the plant dies with the hard rock and grows and flourishes with the classical music. In fact, this one thing I read about, the trailing plant actually curled itself around the player where the music was coming out of. So I thought that was interesting. Okay, so the word, the spoken word is important. If you think about it, God spoke the world into existence. He didn't write the world. He didn't sculpt it. He spoke it. What does that say about the word? About the spoken word? And any time that you read in Scripture of anything, you know, thus saith the Lord. And so it is the spoken word of God that is so important. Now, because we need it written down, it is written down, but it was first spoken. Okay, what is literacy? Well, I thought, we talk about literacy being able to read well and write well. But you know, that wasn't always the definition. So here's a modern definition that I found. Literacy is an individual's ability to read, write, speak in English, compute and solve problems at levels of proficiency necessary to function on the job, in the family of the individual, and in society. That's pretty functional, isn't it? Well, I went into Noah Webster's dictionary to see if I could find how he defined literacy. There's no such word. There is no such word. So I went to the next Noah Webster one. I guess it's 1916 or something. Still not there. That is a new word in our language. And so what I did find was literate and literature. And so a literate person is one lettered or instructed in learning and science. Boy, what a difference, huh? So today we would say a literate person is someone who can read and write pretty well. 150 years ago, it was a person who had read the classics, who was knowledgeable in all the branches of science. That was a literate person. Okay, one of the interesting things, too, about 150 years ago is that there was conversation. The art of the conversation was something that had was an everyday occurrence. You watch any of those specials on PBS where, you know, these British novels, where they have these long conversations and they're wonderful and rich and interesting and convoluted. But, you know, we don't do that so much anymore. Okay, so those are a couple of definitions. One of the things I want to do right now is tell you a story. So one of the things you cannot do while I tell a story is take notes, okay? That's a rule. A deal? Okay. This is a story. It's called The Single Grain of Rice. Anybody know it? Okay. It goes like this. Once there was a king, and he ruled his kingdom wisely and well. And one day, as he was thinking on his life, he realized that he needed to go away and seek the real meaning of life. And so he decided that he would leave the kingdom in the hands of his daughters. He had four of them, and he called them to him, and there they stood. And he said to them, "I'm going away to seek the meaning of life, and I'm leaving the kingdom in your hands." And the four looked at the father and said, How can we rule a kingdom?" "Peace. I don't leave you without a gift, without a means of ruling." And to each, he gave a single grain of rice. And then he went away. The oldest daughter, she looked at her grain of rice and she said, "I know what I'll do." She went and got a long, silken, golden thread. Gossamer it was. She tied that grain of rice around one end, and then she took that golden chain and she lowered it into a crystal box. She put the crystal top on the crystal box. And she put it on a shelf. And every day she took that box from its spot and she looked at her grain of rice. The second daughter, she was more practical. "I know what I'll do. I'll make a pouch." So she went and got leather, soft as butter it was. She sewed it into a beautiful pouch, and she put it at her waist and put the grain of rice in the pouch and kept it with her everywhere she went. The third daughter, well, she looked at that grain of rice and she said, "This is only a dumb grain of rice." And she threw it away. The fourth daughter, she thought and she thought and she thought a long time before she finally decided what she would do. Time passed, and the four daughters ruled the kingdom as best they could in their father's absence. And then one day the king returned, and a great banquet was held. And everyone came to celebrate the return of the king. And after the great feasting and laughing and music, the king stood up from behind the head table. And everyone could see that his beard had grown much longer, and there were white hairs, and a new look of wisdom in his eyes. And he called his four daughters to him. And they came and stood before the king. They were all grown, just a little bit taller. And he said to them, "Give me back the grain of rice that I gave you when I left." The oldest daughter, why, she went for her crystal box and took it down, opened it up and took out that long gossamer golden thread with the grain of rice at the end, and she ran back to her father and she said, "Here, father." And the king, he took the grain of rice in his hand and he bowed. And he said, "Thank you." The second daughter, she didn't have to go anywhere. She just reached in her pouch and she said, "Here, father." And the king took the grain of rice and bowed and said, "Thank you." Now at this point, you're thinking about the third daughter, aren't you? Well, she ran down into the kitchen where they had bags of rice for cooking. And she took a grain and she ran back up and she said, "Here, father." The king took the grain of rice in his hand and he bowed and he said, "Thank you." The fourth daughter stood before her father and she said, "Father, I don't have my grain of rice." "Why not?" "Well, father, I thought about it a long time and I realized a grain of rice is a seed. You plant seeds, So I dug a hole in the ground, and I put the seed in, and I watered it. And after a season, a rice plant grew up. And on that rice plant, there were more seeds. It was barely a handful at first, but I took those and I sowed those. Father, I've been planting and harvesting every year since you left. Come and see. And she led her father to a window, and there, as far as the eye could see, was field after field after field of rice. So much rice that the kingdom would never need to worry about food ever again. And the king took the golden crown of rule off of his own head, and he placed it on the head of his youngest daughter. And she ruled her kingdom from that day forth, and she ruled it wisely and well. And that's the story. Thank you. Thank you. A lovely story like that I think every child should hear. Because at some point, every child and every one of us are one of the four, aren't we? And we recognize ourselves in these. And that's the wonder and the value of stories and storytelling, is that we hear ourselves in the story. We picture ourselves into the story. Well, I'm going to give you a chance to learn this one. Now, let me ask you a question, because some people say, well, I love to hear stories, but I could never learn a story. Most folk tales are a very simple structure. And when you hear a storyteller, they learn that simple structure and set it back in their own words. I'm going to teach you this story, and then you'll learn a principle as a result of it. Now, if I asked you, how many daughters were there? Four. Who else was in the story? All right. Only five people. You can do that. All right. Number one daughter, what did she do with her grain of rice? She worshipped it, didn't she? Yeah. It wouldn't have to be a crystal box. In my story, it was a crystal box, you know? She could actually put it on an altar and bow down to it or something, or seek insight from it every day or something like that. Number two daughter, what did she do? She cherished it, kept it with her. Number three daughter. Right? Hey, we've all been there, right? Number four. What did she do? She invested it. She did something else, too. I mean, she did invest it. It isn't like she went down to the bank and said, here. She did something else with it. She what? She used it for the benefit of the others. Good. What else? She nurtured it, yes. There's a step before that. I want you to think about it because it's important. She thought about the purpose of the gift. And in that act, she had the insight that it wasn't just a grain, it was a seed. It wasn't a thing, it was a process. Yeah. Okay. Now, I know a lot of times people don't like to do this, but I really am going to ask you to be willing to do this with me. Will you pair off with someone? I'm going to show you a game that you can do with your... No. Can't roll your... You rolled your eyes. The only way that you are going to be able to help your children to bring more oral language experiences in is if you will do it yourself. It's going to take you 3 minutes to do this. This story will now be yours for the rest of your life, and you can go home and tell it to your children. Okay, so turn to somebody. All right, would you do that? Okay. And if you don't have a partner... Okay. All right. Now I'm going to give you how this goes. And this little activity, I call it the switch game. If you have, you know, a group of kids, or even if it's just you and your child, you can do this back and forth. It's a wonderful activity. What I'm going to ask you to do is to start the story and tell it in your own words. You're welcome to my words if you want them. But all you have to do is get from the beginning of the story to the end of the story. That's it. And when the first person of your two or three, I'll say, they'll start, and then I'll call switch pretty soon after that. And the person who's listening has to pick up the story where you left off and tell back. I'll call switch again, and you'll go back and forth. Now, this isn't a test, okay? So if you forget, guess what you get to do? You get to ask. Or you can make up, but. But I mean, it's yeah. Let's, okay, you ready? Let's go. Turn to your partner and begin.